Welcome to The Daily Former, a podcast about how the far right does not have to be the rest or the end of your life. With me, I have Jamie, Lauren, Angela, Brad. I'm Sam, and a quality I need in a friend is sincerity. I love sarcasm and gallows humor, but if I can't figure out if we're laughing with or at each other, I don't really want to be around.
I'm Brad, and looking for friends, I would say I need somebody who is equally unoffended by everything, or else it's not going to really go anywhere.
Hi, I'm Lauren. A quality I needed in a friend is definitely transparency. Basically, if we're speaking two different languages, then it ain't going to work.
I'm Jamie, and a quality I look for in a friend is someone with a warped sense of humor that will match mine. Someone that's not really easily offended, but knows what's offensive.
My name is Angela, and a quality I need in a friend is a willingness to grow mentally and emotionally. Growth is something imperative in my life, and if the other person doesn't meet that expectation or meet me in that willingness to grow, I don't have time to waste on teaching another human about why that's important.
Absolutely. When we joined the movement, I had some friends that would keep me at arm's distance and would talk to me sometimes and do this like, hey, when you're done with that, feel free to come back, but I'm not really going to be around you at that time. I had some friends that just outright wouldn't be my friend. What was it like for you guys?
It was about the same with me, actually, with most of my friends. Like, I mean, my friends from high school, they would still talk to me. They kind of kept me at an arm's length, and I mean, rightfully so. They would shut down conversations about the ideology. They would actually listen to me pissing and moaning about all the other members and all the drama, because I think they could see at the time, okay, maybe she's realizing reality behind this, just maybe. And then when I came out of it, I think they already kind of knew before it happened. They're like, yeah, we just noticed a change in the last couple of years. We figured as much that something was shifting. We're happy to see it. So most of them actually are back in my life now, and I'm happy to say that.
Brad and Jamie, you guys were friends in the movement. Did you meet in the movement or were you friends prior?
We met in the movement. I can't even remember how. Didn't we meet off Stormfront?
Something like that. And I think we, like, the first time we actually met, I think it was kind of like a date. We went to Starbucks and we had a coffee and
we did.
You know,
each other's eyes.
It's about right, I think.
You guys went to a Jewish coffee shop in the movement. How dare you?
Maybe that's why it didn't work out. It was destined to not be anything.
I also just quickly want to say that Stormfront is not friendfinder.com. Please do not try and find friends on Stormfront.
No, stay away from it.
Angela, what about you? How were your friendships impacted by you being in the movement?
My friendships were super impacted. I became involved while I was still in high school, to the point that I hounded my bestest friend in the whole world until she was also involved. Like you mentioned, Lauren, I had a lot of friends that came back into my life afterwards, but it was also a part of my own growth of making amends and being like, I was a real asshole and I apologize, or I'm accountable. This wasn't your fault, it was mine. Some of them never came back, but my bestest friend is back and she is also a former.
When you leave, should you try and take your friends with you?
Depends on the friend. So despite me recruiting my best friend and decades having passed by, even when I went to prison and started to change, there was never a point at all where either of us was like, well, you've gone too far now. This is over a line. We remained friends. We transcended the movement bullshittery and dumbfuckery. We are the best of friends now. And actually, we sit with each other and tell the story of us because it spans 3.5 decades. And I love hearing where the rest of our story landed. We're roommates. We live together. I get to live with my bestie forever. It's amazing. And both of us feel like we had to go through that in order to come back together.
It's really touching and really sweet. And I would actually love it if one day I could interview you, Brad, and Jamie about your story, and then you, Angela, and your best friend about your story. I feel like that would actually be a really great women's stories and men's stories converging in a similar theme. We've talked about this so many times where I didn't realize how messed up I was. And so I kept making friends with people and losing friends because I kept trying to pretend that I was more okay than I was. And then I think eventually people were like, she's not well. Did you just try and jump back into, I'm going to meet people, be okay? Or what was it like?
It was kind of interesting because I was reconnecting with friends outside of the movement while I was still there in the last couple of years. And they knew I was going to leave before anybody else ever did. I think it's mostly that my actions had changed, my demeanor, my vibe. You know, most of my friends are pretty intuitive. They could tell. So thankfully, the landing, let's say, was a little bit softer than some other stories that I've heard.
You all talk a lot about going back to school and that being a helpful saving grace for you. Did you find that making friends in an academic situation was easier because people intellectualized your involvement, or did it just not come up?
I think any immersion in something that was not super negative and that was a basic mind destroyer, that's what all of that ideology was doing, is filling up your brain with all this bad shit. When I was in school, there was a lot of profs that were just talking about whatever and not the movement, not extremism, not terrorism. It was always a goal on my mind in my life to study criminology. So it just opened up that door of trying to seek out an actual goal rather than going through the motions of the movement, the day-to-day crisis, the chaos, all that kind of stuff. It was actually kind of rewarding to just build relationships with people that liked you for just you and didn't mind spending time with you because you had similar interests that weren't super racist shit.
A valid point. If you put yourself into a positive situation with positive people that respect you.
When you have actual things in common, and when you stop drinking, you kind of realize the only thing you had in common was drinking, and you don't actually even like your friends.
Man, we talked about that all the time when we were still in the group. We'd be sitting there going, what the fuck are we doing? We don't like these people. It wasn't that they were horrible people. I just don't think they realized the struggles that they were having in their lives. And then they would perpetuate those things on others that were supposed to be their friends. So you'd go to a bar and some guy's having some crisis of mind, and then they end up getting in a fight, and then everyone ends up getting arrested or whatever. And it's like, here we are again. Why are we with people? You kind of make your own bed, but then when you leave, you're like, oh, I went out to a bar with people and had a bite to eat and a couple of beers, and no one got arrested and nobody got hit. I'm like, wow, this is normal.
Oh my God, did you? Oh my God. I was with people, they wouldn't all try to physically fight people, but they would try and see who could say the most offensive words the loudest. And I was just always kind of looking over my shoulder, like, why do we think that shouting the N-word and seeing if the family next to us notices? How is that edgy?
I think like one time Brad and I, there was a bunch of us at a pub, and one of the girls that showed up put on like a swastika armband. And I'm looking at her like, what are you doing? It's the middle of the afternoon on a bright sunny day in a patio, wearing a fucking swastika armband. Are you an idiot?
Yeah, it's such a bummer. And that's kind of when you realize it's all just a LARP. It's all a cosplay of we're tough guys. And really, you're not. You're doing arts and crafts, you know, just with very specific designs. How did you make friends with people that were the antithesis of what the movement told you?
As far as making friends with people that I wasn't necessarily used to being around before, I would just ask questions, although some of them sounded pretty dumb, like, what's this? What does that mean? But you know what? In their eyes, it probably just sounded like I was taking interest in what they were talking about. So I feel like it did work out that way.
I had some really amazing experiences because I started college right out of prison. Not right out of high school, right out of prison. And I was in an environment with young people. And here I am starting my life at almost 30. And I've talked a lot about transparency. I just show up and I'm like, yep, this is what I used to be. This is what I have been charged and convicted of. And this is who I am today. There was this one girl that was Jamaican. She was a young woman. She also worked doing the same student work I did. And I was poor as fuck because I'm just out of prison trying to support myself. I've got like five side jobs, going to school full time. Her dad would pack her little potato rolls and little slices of cheddar cheese every day. So she started bringing some for me too every day. And there were a lot of really amazing experiences, but I straight up, the conversation we're having, I had it with myself. I was like, should I tell them the first day we met? I just met somebody new. Should I text them? Should I call them now and be like, just so you know? Or do I wait? Do I give it a couple weeks? And basically, it came down to my instinct and the person, what kind of human they were. And people were open to me and open to seeing that change literally happen or the beginnings of it.
Jamie, Brad, do you guys have any experiences with this?
Yeah, I remember a friend from before the movement. Like, I grew up in the same neighborhood as him and stuff. And like, after we didn't hang around much when I was involved in it, but then afterwards he came to me and he was like, "My family, they didn't want me to have anything to do with you because when we found out about all that shit, they were, insane." And he was like, "I felt kind of bad. Now I'm trying to like explain it to my mom why we're hanging out and having pints again." And I'm like, "Don't worry about it, dude. Just say what it is. It's not on you for me being in that." But yeah, I could tell like he was struggling to conceptualize what kind of friends we were supposed to be now. Because the before times was great, leading up to joining that thing. And then how do you restart off where you left off kind of thing? It's been fine now, but it was pretty awkward at the beginning. And I think even with Jamie and I, so long as he doesn't mind me telling this part of the story, we left the movement around the same time, like within a couple of years of each other, right? And he kind of just faded away. We had been through like some pretty intimate times, like the time that we spent together in the movement and now after, but it's part of my wedding. There was some big life moments that we spent together. And I had a feeling when we were leaving that we would probably reconnect at some point because I knew that we had the same things in mind. Like, you want to be doing positive shit. You want to be just trying to live your life. I know we always joked about just being old and looking at these people in these groups and saying like, this is not going to be for us forever. This is definitely not a forever thing. And like, we would always say, how do we retire or how do we get the fuck out of here? So it kind of resonates with me. It was almost like we should never have been involved to begin with. It was kind of like we wasted those years. We could have been doing so much other shit. Yeah, hindsight's 2020. I guess here we are, but now we've come to terms with the realities of life and moved on.
I really resonate with that because my bestie and I, younger and during our involvement, we always had this dream of it's going to be us as two old ladies in like rocking chairs on the porch, enjoying our lives and reaping the benefits of what we'd sown. But also, even though she remained in much longer than I did, she had to place boundaries with me because I was so deeply involved and I was violent in a big way and getting in trouble. And I was going down such a terrible path that even though she was involved, she was like, that's too much. And it sounds cheesy, but there are so many beautiful things about our friendship and the things that we've gone through together and what we've overcome. And it's amazing because we both know where each other comes from because we have been friends for so long.
It's really beautiful. You know that that's a real friendship, especially if it can transcend that kind of change. Do you guys ever test each other, Jamie and Brad? I'm just curious, like, did you guys know to believe each other? And same thing with you, Angela. Was it just an intuitive, my friend is out. Thank God. I am grateful for that. Or did you have to screen them, basically?
I think because Brad and I didn't chat for about 3 or 4 years, I think we kind of disconnected. And then we decided to meet up for a beer. So obviously, I know I was apprehensive, and I'm sure he was too, because you never know what the other person is going to be like. But I mean, after having a beer and chatting and bullshitting, you kind of have a good idea where the other person's at and where they've come from and how much they've changed. As for testing, no, we've never tested each other because we're so far gone now that there's really no need to test each other.
Yeah, you've demonstrated it
Yeah,
enough.
it's already there. But for other people, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's good to put out feelers and to test if people have actually changed. If there is some sort of apprehension of are they changing? Are they just trying to bullshit you? Are they stringing you along? I don't know. Is that the right thing to do? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
I gotta admit, like I do that sometimes. Even when we're working in the exit program with folks, you'll get a person that comes along and they're like, "Can you just say that I'm good now?" And I'm like, "No, man, that's for you to say. You'll know when you're good. You will say. I will not say. I'm not in your brain. I'm just here to help you along the way. You want to sit on the bench, we can hold hands while you do it
Yeah.
or whatever. But I'm not going to sit here and go, you're de-radicalized. I think vetting is perhaps, I think what I'm trying to say here is that vetting is maybe the wrong term for it. Like when I met Tony and Angela and stuff, it was just people that were there that had the same shit going on. They weren't saying you must do this. They weren't saying you got to do that. Just do you, get better. And we had that group, the Facebook group, and Tony and I lived in the same area. So we would meet up and have coffees, have beers or whatever to spend time together. And that was the most valuable shit, I think, to figure out where people were at. And I think even now, when I spend some time with people, it's easier to pick up on things nowadays than it was at first. But you know, there was one guy I met with, and he was telling me that he had left the movement, but they were building this website and they were going to sell stuff. And I was like, you didn't leave the movement. You're taking your business and making it not swastikas, making it something else.
Yeah.
So cool, go do that ish, but I'm good. I'll pass. Because it's, again, there's value in the friendships when there's honesty, right? It's hearing all the different stuff, not just the weird comments that they make about shit being anti-white or whatever. That's the process. Then we insert ourselves into that and be like, yo, that term's pretty fucked. Can we try something else? Right. But you have to find where that opening is. And if they're not at that place where that intervention is necessary, I think we know now. We kind of have a feel for it. Like, yeah, they still believe that shit. So they're going to have to work on that themselves.
Well, back to former school, if there was one. You know, Sam, you were asking about do we screen people now? Or sometimes it has to just be blind trust and trusting your gut. You already know the kind of key things to listen out for. And when you hear how someone's life is going, if they're like, man, I've got criminal charges hanging over me because of X, Y, or Z,
Because I did a
and I don't have
crime.
a job, right? And I'm going to just call her Coco. With Coco, she has a husband that she's been married to for years, and I never met him. So I was kind of nervous when they moved here, having not met him. But I trust her, and I know
Yeah.
she knows who I am, and she would never do anything to hurt me. Formers are not. Even if we disagree about something, she wouldn't. And that blind trust led me to a whole new little family dynamic. He's a former too. And we get to sit in our own home safely and comfortably and talk about, I wish I didn't have these tattoos anymore. I wish I would have not done that. That was really stupid. Why did we do it? And really dig in. But it was about trust to begin with. Sometimes we have to just gut check, whatever it takes.
I want to kind of bring this up because I think it's an interesting thing. You guys are all describing this intuition and this gut check. We all have it. We all know that when we see a former being platformed, we just all know intuitively whether it's someone doing a money grab and just trying to capitalize on it or if they like mean it. Do you think it's possible that in the future we will be able to develop the language for that intuition we have to help people that aren't us understand what we're talking about? Or do you think it's something that we as formers just have? Like, if I'm trying to make a new friend, I know when I do and don't trust them. Even with blind trust, there's always that little ticking in the back of your head where you're like, I don't know, something feels wrong about this. But do you think we'll ever actually be able to explain to people what we mean?
Should we? Should we just bottle this as like former's trade secrets?
The sauce. I think really I'm asking because there is this conversation about whether former should be legitimized in this field or not. And this is something that we have that you cannot go to school for. You cannot read in a textbook the experience and the intuition that we've gotten from it. But is this something that we would ever be able to teach people? Or is this just like a fun little residual side effect of our experience?
I don't think you can teach it. I think it's just part of who we are as formers. We know the scene, we know the movement, we know the bullshit. And I don't think you can explain that to someone. You may be able to write it down, but they're not going to fully understand or grasp of what you're saying, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole nexus point of like trying to explain Angela, with your point too, like we just know the BS when it's coming in. It's not something that you can tell a social worker because they weren't members of those groups. Like you could say it to them a thousand times, but they would need to have the intuition to pick up on the emotional status of that person and where they're at in their stages of change or where they're at in their de-radicalization or whatever. There's some current things that I can think of, like multiple cases that I'm dealing with right now, that this is actually happening in real time. The who is like at a huge level. They're trying to serve it to you. And I'm like, just no, keep working. Come back in a number of months. I don't know what the, because we don't put timelines on stuff. That's what I think the problem is. Other folks might try to like collate it or try to get data from it. It's literally like you just feel it and you know. And when that poo platter is being served, you got to just say no thanks, we're good right now. And you know, help, that's our point. Our point is to be there, to be approachable and help people talk through this. But like sometimes you got to just call this stuff out too, right? And I know Lauren, so many times we talk about, you just like look at them and be like, come on, what is that?
A huge thing for me, actually, is especially if it's someone I used to know from the movement that I'm speaking with, is you can tell pretty quickly if they're still living in the past. Like, are they bringing up shit like, hey, remember when you did this the one time? And that's the whole fucking conversation. I just sit there with this really unamused look on my face and I'm like, yes, I do remember. I'm not proud of it though.
Why the memories? The, like, okay, thanks for reminding me of the worst period of my life.
You know what, Brad, though? We have the ability to teach others how to hone that skill in themselves. This is what we bring to the table that nobody else can, but we can use that for good. We can work with social workers, we can work with others, and it's like puzzle pieces. I brought this part of the puzzle to the table, you bring your part. And then let's put it all together and make the big picture. I love that about what we get to do, that it is something that we have all learned the hard way. None of this came easy to us. We all have worked on it tremendously over the
Yeah.
years, and we'll probably still be working on it, but we keep getting better at it. We keep being more cohesive. And yeah, I don't think it can be taught necessarily. We can maybe translate it into a language that others can kind of understand, but these are special skills. We have special skills.
When you are making friends with people and they do make jokes every once in a while, it kind of goes back to our boundaries talk. What do you do in that moment where someone honestly makes a joke? Like, let's say a Jewish person makes a sort of anti-Semitic joke. Do you have to stand there and be like, hey, buddy, don't fucking say that shit around me? Or is it kind of like, hey, this is my stuff that I need to worry about? How do you make friends when you really don't know how to interact with people in that way?
Oh my gosh. Listen, this is probably not the right answer. I recently had a really good friend who's also a former ask me for advice. And that person referred to themselves as a kind of slur that we used to use. And I was like, fine, you got that category. I got the gays. Like, I can call you gay because I'm gay. And you know, in Fight Club, when they split up the groups, it was like that. And I have thought so much about it because it's such a weird dynamic that I finally got to, that's where I'm at with it. If you want to say those things about yourself, you deal with the consequences of that. It didn't come out of my mouth. And I do joke about, like, I'm in the gay club. And I feel like I can do that. It doesn't offend me if my close friends are like, you're so gay. I'm like, yes, I am. I mean, those kind of things I feel are different, but I think it's situational for each person. Like, what's your comfort level? What if somebody came to me in all seriousness and was like, how do you teach against all this hate? But you're saying things that other people might use against you. Well, I'm taking back words that are used against me, and I'm using them in a completely different way. What everybody else does, not my fucking problem. As long as you're not speaking the words as violence.
I had a friend who would like to say eggnog, but instead of egg, it was the beginning of a slur. I feel like you guys get what I'm saying. And I would always say, hey, that really makes me uncomfortable, blah, blah, blah. And they'd be like, oh, well, I'm a quarter black or whatever. And I'm like, you know, when you go to a restaurant, whether you smoke or not, you don't smoke in a restaurant. And I am now that restaurant. And you and that word are cigarettes. You can say it whatever you want, however you want, outside of this situation. And they started doing it, but they kind of complained about it. And so now, whenever we talk at the end of every conversation, I'm like, congratulations, you didn't say a slur. You kind of have to infantilize people and just kind of be like, hey, this extremely easy thing to not do, just not be an ignorant fuck, is really hard for some people. It was hard for me for a little bit too. I didn't even really use racial slurs, but I would make points, you know, and use the same stereotypes and say the same things. And whether I used 50 cent words or not, I was saying the same exact thing that people using the N-word would say. So setting those boundaries can be really frustrating. Have you gone back to a friend once you left the movement and realized that they were actually not good for you and you had to leave that friendship? Because that's happened to me
Yes.
like a shit ton of times. Yeah, tell me about it.
Actually, it was a relative of mine who shall remain unnamed. We wound up in the same place. We got into an argument years and years prior. So we tried to be decent towards one another, had an okay-ish conversation, although I was feeling pretty on edge the whole time. So that kind of told me a lot. And then later in the conversation, she started making fun of another girl's weight. So I told her that she's pretty until she opens her mouth, and that was the end of that.
Good job, Lauren. What about you guys?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I'll just sort of mold them together. But there's one guy, there's an acquaintance from just like working or whatever. And then somehow we end up living in the same community or whatever. And then, you know, we're talking, and he was never like the movement guy, but I guess like COVID and all this shit was going on in his head. And I realized that he was a very severe conspiracy theorist. And he was like trying to, you know, get me going on it. And I'm like, I can't hang out with this person because it's like he doesn't even realize that he's saying anti-Semitic shit. He's like believing QAnon crap. I wanted to be friends with him, but it's not possible because of the way things were going for him in his life at that time.
What about you, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm kind of struggling with a friend right now. He was in the movement, he left the movement, but he's kind of getting into the whole manosphere, man going your way type thing, which is sort of borderline. Well, I shouldn't say it's sort of borderline. The misogyny's there. So I'm kind of struggling with his thought process of, oh, I'm just going to do my own thing now and I'm not dealing with women anymore. I'm really struggling with how to approach him. And do I just cut him off? Do I just be like, I'm done with you? You know, I've known the guy for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know what to do because I don't want to hear the MGTOW bullshit or the Manosphere bullshit or anything like that.
I was just going to ask, how are you navigating that?
I call him out on it and say, hey, listen, the only reason you're jaded is because you had a horrible experience in a relationship. And then that's why you're painting everyone like that. You're taking one situation of your life and then that's your explanation for everything. And he's like, oh, I know, I'm just joking. I don't think that. I'm like, well, you keep talking about how you're this top dog alpha male. And I'm like, well, I'm a zebra male. He's like, well, what's that? Well, if you're going to make up a term, I'm going to make up a term. So yeah, I do my best to keep my distance, but we've known each other a long time and he's a decent friend, but what do I do? How do I navigate that? I honestly don't know what to do.
Are you comfortable just being really transparent and saying, you know, what I used to be involved in and what I used to believe? And when you talk about this, it bothers me because it reminds me so much of what I was in. So something's got to change for me.
Yeah, that's yeah. He knows what I research and what I look at because I'm doing a lot of stuff on incels and whatnot. So I don't know if he's doing it to sort of push my buttons or does he actually believe this?
Just kind of an idea, maybe to see where his mind is at, if he's just trying to provoke you or if he's actually serious. try telling him what Angela had said. I'm not comfortable with this. And if you respect me and our friendship, then you'll stop or at least limit it. But if he keeps going, then it means he's trying to provoke you, I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, it also comes to like, what is he doing? You have to look at the actions as well. It can't just be like, oh, I fucking hate women. Like if he's going to bars and provoking women and negging them and...
No.
But I mean, also if he's staying home and he's going on revenge porn sites or whatever it is, then yeah, there's a reason for concern there, you know? I also don't know why anyone would want to pretend to be an incel. That's like a very weird niche sense of humor that I don't share, but it can be really tough.
When you said he's this way because of a bad experience before with the relationship, so maybe encouraging him to work through that, because obviously it's still affecting him somehow.
True. That's a valid point.
It's also this thing that I call the Velcro effect, which is not a scientific term, but it's this deal of being still attached to parts of the movement. Like these guys might be somewhat not involved in the whole thoughts anymore, but oh, but that MGTOW shit though, that's not wrong. That bit still is good. Or they're like still anti-LGBTQ because they're like, well, that's acceptable in my community. I've had to say that to me.
Jamie, is it actually Brad that you're debating on whether you should?
Sorry, Brad. I tried.
He didn't know how to tell you.
My username is incel442. No, I'm kidding. It's interesting how pieces of it resonate with certain people in certain ways because they have had real time, real life experiences with bad relationship, which is like, we all have gone through that at some point. We've had garbage relationships. And like, yeah, I get it, but go get therapy for that bit or whatever. Go get help for that. Lots of the folks that I've helped over the time, like they're like, oh, then when they do go and get that help or they do actually talk about it, they're like, oh, I feel so much better now. Okay. Even if it's just talking to us about it at exit or whatever, they help them get by that a bit. They may still have a little bit. I always find that the misogyny and that stuff kind of stays around. And that's kind of why it's a root of all of this white supremacist movements, and because it's largely acceptable.
It's also reinforced by society in general.
Yeah. Like you bob through life and you're going to get that shit. It's going to pop up and it's going to smack you sometimes and you know it's there. But particularly with these dudes, they're like, well, I'll just hang on to that bit of misogyny because, you know, it still makes me feel good.
Makes me a man. Still makes me the alpha.
You know, there's a journey that you go on. You can stop believing in certain things, but I don't think de-radicalized is the right word. And I also don't think that you wake up one day, all of my far-right beliefs are gone. I'm not wrestling with anything. I have no underlying residual internalized misogyny or homophobia or xenophobia or this, that, or the other. You're impacted by this. It's with you for life in some way.
I like the last bit the most about the de-radicalization highway. This thing that has two sides to it, right? The fucking highway goes in both ways. You might be feeling great about how you've made some headway, but there's still the other way that's, I still fucking like a bit of this. And you're grappling with that. And that's fucking okay, though. Angela, we've talked about this too. You don't just write someone off because all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you know, but gay marriage. No, let's talk about it. Maybe they do have a fundamental issue with it. So let's talk through it, right? Let's humanize that scenario for them so we can help them work through those things, right?
Some people are just shitty communicators too. So I think it's worth digging into.
It's also really worth saying, listen, if you're a homophobe, that does not mean that you're far right. If you are super anti-immigration, all that shit, that does not mean that you're far right. People have these beliefs. Having a couple super conservative or hyper hardline beliefs does not mean that you are a domestic terrorist. It's when you start to form that little nebulous cloud of a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and suddenly I have an AK-47, or suddenly I have a haircut of a certain type, or suddenly I this, that, or the other, like... It's not just one. It's much like everything else. You have to have several symptoms. It's not just one belief that makes you this thing. We can talk to you and say, hey, if this is something you want to change, we can talk to you about it.
Just want to remind us that those are mainly academic terms, and they are thrown around by a lot of individuals who don't understand what they mean. When you talk about disengagement, when you talk about de-radicalization, It should be from like the foundation of disengagement is more physical. You can stop believing the things, but you may still not have disengaged from the people. You may have realized, wow, this is a violent crowd and I'm going to end up going to prison if I don't physically stop hanging out with them, but that doesn't change the beliefs. When it comes to radicalization and de-radicalization, that's all cognitive. Acts have been conflated with ideas.
Yes.
And there's a distinction to be made there. If you're not describing the problem correctly, naming it, get out of town.
Absolutely. I think we're going to leave it there. Thank you guys so much for talking. We literally could have talked for hours about this, I am sure. But for the sake of our voice boxes and for everyone listening, we're going to cut it here. If you have any experience making friends or having to leave friends after you left the movement, write to us, email us, and we are also on Discord now. We've got a pretty good crew in there so far, and we are waiting for you to join. Thank you guys so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, y'all.